With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Injured at work in a motor vehicle accident or had a fall in a public space? Speak to Your Claim Lawyers, a no-win, no-fee personal injury claims law firm that specialises in maximising compensation claims for injured people. Call 1-800-YOUR-CLAIM or yourclaimlawyers.com.au.
Sunday crunch time.
Cameron was one-on-one, Moore shut down the space. Mark was paid to Cameron, who got flat palms to it the first time. Geelong are within two kicks. Cameron, Howe held him out, but Cameron got fine bounce in the goal square. And there's just one kick in it. Cameron's got four. Left foot kick out in front, Cameron. Jeremy Cameron on the lead. Cameron for five. Geelong have come from absolutely nowhere in the third term. Clock at 8 seconds. There's the siren from the worst game of 2021 between these two teams to the best game in 2022.
Well, they were staring down the barrel at three-quarter time, but the Cats rallied in their skipper's record-breaking night to find a way to overcome a high-energy, combative Collingwood on a finals-type night at the MCG.
It's hard not to be disappointed. You know, like you get to a stage in the game where you're up by five goals or something in three-quarter time and then look at a result. But, I just think where we're at the moment, we're sort of finding out a bit about ourselves. You know, what level we can compete at against, you know, mature opposition and quality teams. So we're just sort of finding out a bit of ourselves, and I thought there was a lot of positives to take out of it.
Pretty embarrassing. It's really poor on our standards. We're trying to work hard, and today we got outworked. It's pretty simple. Midfield got outworked. The defenders were poor. They let their man lead them to the ball, and they're forced in play in front. It was a really simple, basic game today that we let ourselves down enormously. And yeah, we should be embarrassed.
Two coaches at the opposite end of the spectrum last night. Craig McRae, while certainly feeling the disappointment of letting a winning margin slip, can walk away with plenty of upside. In contrast, for David Noble, he was nothing short of brutally honest as North Melbourne took a significant step backwards on a horror night at the Gabba. Welcome to Sunday Crunch Time. Coming to you from an overcast MCG, quite eerie. I think we're the only ones here to get a big day started. Carlton and Hawthorn, a lot of anticipation around this clash. You're both undefeated for 2022. It's a big Sunday afternoon, isn't it? St Kilda and Richmond to do battle later today across the road at Marvel Stadium. And then West Coast and Fremantle, the depleted West Coast again with 12 changes this week on the back of 14 last week, but they'll rise for the Derby. One of the great clashes, and we saw it with the showdown. How good was that on Friday night? And the Derby, we're hoping, is going to be something of a similar nature later on today. It's the day after 52,974 came to the MCG, and we got an early taste of two teams playing that finals type game. Momentum swings that I don't think I've seen like that for quite some time. Brett Phillips joined by Josh Jenkins as we build up to Carlton Hawthorn, but take a good look back, Josh, at a huge Saturday footy. Good to see you. You were here last night in the thick of it.
I feel like I've only just left this place. I was here at about midnight last night, and it was a great celebration for Joel Selwood in a historical night for he and for the club and for the competition as a whole. Stephen Kernaghan was fortunate enough to be out on the field when Stephen Kernaghan passed the baton for the most games captained ever, a record which we talk about Buddy Franklin's record or his 1,000 goals being the last time we'll probably witness that. Yep. Well, it's unlikely we'll see anyone get near Joel's record for a while because he's not done. He's still got another, yes, 10 or 15 or 20 or 30 games ahead of him. So that was unique and great to be a part of. And then the game lived up to the occasion as well. Collingwood, at different stages, looked a very, very, very slick operation. And there was a stage there in the third quarter we thought, well, this thing's all over.
They were on world record pace, weren't they? Contested ball, it was ferocious. And just watching it from the couch, you're here, but the close-up camera angles just gave you that the real feel of how much heat was around the footy in Collingwood. And once they get the army behind them here at the MCG, you thought, who's going to stop them? So you're around the three-quarter time huddle. Josh, you're getting the feel of the group, and they've taken that onslaught from Collingwood. Did you feel like the group had a response in them?
You never really know. I guess hindsight always gives you the benefit of you sugar it or you coat it according to what happens afterwards. But Chris Scott was straight out there.
Yep.
So, you know, typically the quarter time, three quarter time huddles, the guys will come in and then they'll just disperse to their positions. And I think Chris identified. It would have been easy for the group to have gone, oh, geez, what's just happened there?
Yeah.
I think this thing's over. You know, you don't, no one says it, but you look up, six goals. I think this thing's all over. So I think Chris identified that and he was straight out. So he was out there before anyone, before any of us along the boundary could even get out there. So I think he wanted to get out there and get in their face, not get in their face, but just instill some belief on a big night for the club. If we can rally, then who knows? And he was able to do that. And a few things went the boys' way, the Cats' way. But it, to me, I could have sworn the two teams changed jumpers at three-quarter time because Collingwood were outnumbering and they were zippy and they were fast and they were kicking great goals in the third quarter. And then Geelong's younger players, and they're the guys I want to focus on because I felt like it was Holmes, Stengel, DeConning going forward, obviously Cameron. But it was the young guys who really, really got involved in the fourth quarter and really, in my opinion, they were the ones who drove that comeback. It was more about those young guys providing run and dash and drive and some boldness as it was about anything else that happened.
Because that has to be the evolution of Geelong, doesn't it? Because you know what you're going to get out of Dangerfield and Selwood.
Yep.
Tom Stewart, you know, 29 last night. You know what he's going to do patrolling across halfback, Cam Guthrie in the middle, but it's that next tier that we've been wondering about for a little while. I mean, Geelong are always pressing close there around the mark. That's been a given now for the best part of 15 years. But to be able to go on to actually win the Holy Grail again, you need that second, that third tier to be standing up in big games like this when the heat's on.
That's right, and it was a big game. You know, a lot of the young players haven't been exposed to the MCG on a Saturday night with 50-odd thousand in the house. And at different stages, it felt, you know, 70,000, 75,000 because the Collingwood Army was up and about. They have been starved of these situations, both the players and the fans. And it was a great atmosphere. It was a really nice night for footy. It was a little bit blustery, as it always is here at the G. But it was a quality game of footy. Both teams had their turns. And I think from a Geelong point of view, you're thrilled about the comeback and the spirit and the fight and, you know, everything that the team was able to achieve in honour of Joel and on his night. But I think the takeaway is the young guys that really drove that. You know, Tyson Stengel didn't have a great night, ends up with only 14 disposals but 7 score involvements. Every time he got the ball last night, good things happened. As I said, Holmes running up and down the wing and DeConning, who probably at different stages was beaten in one-on-ones ahead of the ball. Darcy Cameron took a big mark on him. He gave away a goal here or there. He turned the ball over by foot. But he went forward, showed great character and got involved and sort of set up a few forward thrusts and scores as well. So a really good night. I think both teams will be somewhat happy. Geelong clearly will be thrilled. But Collingwood will be proud of how they played and they'll also take great belief when they look back and think, our brand does stand up.
Yes.
We need to be able to do it for longer and longer and longer. And that's the evolution of their new game style. But also, I reckon when the coaches sit down tomorrow, they'll look at the numbers and they'll think, oh, how did we lose that game? Yeah, we won everything except for the scoreboard. We kicked inaccurately and Geelong kicked accurately. And that's important. We've seen that across a lot of the games. You know, Porter is zipping three on the back of some really poor kicking and some great kicking against them. So bad kicking's bad football, BP.
It is. Craig McRae, love listening to him last night. He's measured. And he talked about that level of belief, Josh, at the style and you're implementing that, coming into a new group, you need the buy-in of the players. So the players think, yeah, we can play this style of game. How do we just tinker a little just to be able to survive four quarters? Because you're going at that pace, that combative chaos type footy. How do you just adjust it in-game? It's a difficult one, but that's a small sample for Craig McRae, and that'll continue to evolve.
Yeah, it will for sure, and it's very, very reminiscent of Richmond. Yeah. It is Richmond. Yep. It's might be a hard pill for some Pies fans to swallow, the fact that they are copying Richmond's brand, but we've seen how successful that is. Now, the thing is, and this is what makes Richmond so admirable, is it's a very taxing style of footy for the opposition, but for the Pies. So you come up against that style of footy as an opponent, you know, once a year or twice a year, you know, whichever, you know, there might be two or three teams who play that chaotic style. They've got to do it every single week. And I think that's what we saw to a degree last night. Some of the younger guys couldn't sustain it. And even some of their older players, it's you know, still side bottom was struggling late in the game with some quad and calf issues. It's a really taxing game. You know, times where the ball should or would normally go out of bounds and you get a chance to reset and draw breath, they're being asked to knock it back in. Yeah. And the game's, you know, continuing to evolve. And again, that's why Richmond have been, such a weapon of a team, because they've been able to sustain that for 5 years. Collingwood are, you know, 3 weeks in. Mm. Great signs, but they'll continue to get better and better and more comfortable with that program.
Incredible momentum shifts last night. 9-goal third quarter for Collingwood, led by 30 at three-quarter time. Geelong answer with 7 goals of their own. In the last quarter, if you're just catching up this morning, 16-8, 104, the Cats knock over the Pies, 13-13, 91. And on the fly on the wall, I want to be the fly on the wall all the time to hear every conversation. And Joel Selwood, I mean, you've been fortunate to go and play with the Cats now, working off-field with the Cats. He's revered everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, there's skippers who often will talk. You know, I give Joel Selwood a call, and Joel Selwood says, give me a call anytime just to pick my brain about leadership and evolving as a captain. You mentioned Tyson Stengel, young Holmes, and you see him just walk up to Selwood, and you can see that tight bond that he develops with those young guys, you know, coming into the Geelong system. Can you sort of succinct it? Just Joel Selwood, a guy who's been analysed by everyone, but you've seen it more up close than a lot of people.
He has no ego at all, and I mean none whatsoever. And he has as much passion. I've never seen this from anyone that I've really come into contact with. He has as much love for the young boy or girl who wears the half cat costume as he does for Chris Scott. He has as much love for the person who does the ring around the cold calling for the memberships as he does for Steve Hocking. It's incredible how much care he has for the club. Now, he grew up as a Geelong fan, but that's, you know, there's lots of players who grew up barracking for the team they now play for. They don't necessarily go upstairs and spend time up there. And he just loves everything about the club. He's almost closer with some of the part-time staff than he is with some of the players, because he just absolutely loves the place. He wants everyone's experience at the Geelong Footy Club, whether it's a year or 10 years, to be as good as possible. And he takes so much pride in that. And I've been quite lucky to be able to see it up close. You know, I've played with some really good leaders, and Rory Sloane and Taylor Walker and Nathan Van Berlow and Ben Rutten. But he's just got so much care for absolutely anything that's got blue and white hoops on it. He cares about it.
And when you're a person like that, I'm just looking at, you know, the Shane Warne stand in front of us and watching, you know, and just hearing about the impact Shane Warne had on people. So anyone that was in his company, he made him feel 10 feet taller.
Mm.
He had eyeballs just on you. He made you feel special. I imagine Joel Selwood's that type of person. You talk about him talking to everyone from the top all the way down to the people who are the unsung heroes of the footy club, who don't get any kudos, but making them feel that they are the kings in a sense.
Yeah, that's right. And he was probably my most annoying / hated opponent when I was playing for Adelaide, because he gives you nothing.
Yeah.
He will engage physically and verbally with you. He'll say stuff to you, and he'll get in your face, and he'll whack you in the guts, and he gives as good as he gets. I think everyone, opposition fans can't stand him, and they say he ducks and he does this and he does that. But that's because he doesn't care for anyone else wearing any other colours. He cares for the blue and white hoops, and he'll do whatever it takes to ensure that the blue and white hoops come out on top. And I think that's what makes him so revered inside the club. And I think once his career is done, the rest of us will probably, or those involved at other clubs and fans of other clubs, will sort of take a step back and think, he was pretty amazing. I wish he was at our club.
Well, just on that, I mean, obviously, any time he went near the footy last night, there's the boos. Yes, Chris Scott wouldn't really be drawn into that when asked last night. But, that, I mean, you're never going to stop that in sport. It's just impossible. I think it's... I sort of see it. It's not necessarily a total disrespect for the guy. It's just, you're a combative supporter. You want your team to win. You've got rose-coloured glasses just for your team. And I don't necessarily see it's a huge disrespect thing. It's almost... As strange as this might sound, it's almost a compliment.
Yeah, I understand exactly what you're saying. It's a bit of a... And they're not booing him because he's not an important part of the game. They're not booing him because he's irrelevant. They're booing him because they know he's critical to the fortunes of the Cats and how important he's been and how good a player he's been for the past 15 or 16 years. So that's the reason that they are booing. There's definitely a threshold. Mm. You know, if it's consistent booing for no apparent reason, but you know, he's involved in a scuffle with young Jack Ginnivan, so there was a little bit of that. There was a big Collingwood contingent here, so it was probably no surprise that the Black and White Army were going to give a few jeers.
Cats found a way last night. They got Brisbane next weekend at GMHBA Stadium. First time the Cats get to play at home, and Brisbane 3-0. We'll talk about their demolition of North Melbourne after the break. We're building up to Carlton and Hawthorn. We'll go inside both camps within this hour as well and get a word from Tim Clark and also Robert Harvey. You're listening to Crunch Time for Red Energy. Moving house, call local energy retailer Red Energy and Regional Development Victoria.
You're listening to Crunch Time, brought to you by the Isuzu D-Max. Born to live.
Welcome to Sunday Crunch Time, MCG Sunday afternoon footy, coming your way with the Blues and the Hawks in about an hour and a half's time. Of course, St Kilda and Richmond a little bit later on today at Marvel Stadium West Coast to take on Fremantle in the Derby over in Perth. So it's a huge Sunday of footy. Brett Phillips alongside Josh Jenkins. A few of the players are out just having an early touch on the beautiful hallowed turf of the MCG. Hopefully we don't get any rain a little bit later on, but a good crowd certainly expected here. We'll dissect Brisbane and North Melbourne very shortly, but I want to go back to the other game that was played on Saturday. I called this game, Josh, and GWS certainly back to their ball-moving best after that was heavily scrutinised against Richmond at this very ground. Tom Green outstanding in the middle. What a player he is, a pure footballer. Tim Taranto, the ball on a string yesterday. Steve Canelio back to some of his best form. But our next guest played a significant role in quelling the key playmaker of the Gold Coast in Tuke Miller. I speak of Lachie Ash from the GWS Giants. Lachie, welcome to Crunch Time.
Thank you, boys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Great to have you on. Leon Cameron, I think, sort of had a chat to you midweek about sitting on Miller. We know how influential he's been. He's running power through the ground. Just take us through the week in the build-up to playing on one of the competition's key playmakers.
Yeah, obviously, through the pre-season, had a positional change, and Leon sort of mentioned a few times throughout the pre-season that it is an option that we could go to. And then, he sort of said to me midweek, I think it'd be a really good matchup. And we sort of need to negate his influence as he is sort of a dominant player for Gold Coast and a bit of a barometer. He really sparks their midfield and creates sort of the drive and link-up play. So, he sort of just chatted to me just about trying to nullify that influence he has to link up, especially between the arcs. He definitely generates a lot of their transition. So, it was obviously going to be a big challenge. Obviously, he's definitely a class player. But, I sort of like having the challenge of playing on opposition best players when it presents. So, it was one I look forward to earlier in the week. And then, when I got out there on Saturday, it was sort of just, getting down to business and putting the vision and stuff that I'd watched to good use.
Lachie, Josh Jenkins here. Well done on the team's performance and your performance as an individual. I'm interested, how difficult was it for you to... You said you've had a bit of a positional change and it's relatively new to you. So how did you balance the focus on what Tuukka Miller's going to do versus still being able to focus on playing the game and playing to some of your strengths?
Yeah, definitely. I think it was more so as being a back, I think the off-ball stuff, I think I sort of have down pat in terms of running position, running patterns and body work and stuff away from the contest. It's more so just the stuff inside that's probably new to me. So I really just tried to focus on that as much as I could, knowing that like my off-ball stuff was, sort of in check and takes care of itself. And then, yeah, when we've got the footy, Leon sort of gives me a license to be able to use my running ability to try and get off them and try and create for us. But then, yeah, just always having the back of my mind that my number one role is to, negate his influence. So then once the ball's turned over, just trying to get back to him as quick as possible. It's sort of, just the thought process that goes through my mind when having a role on someone.
Have you done too good a job? Are you likely to have this role each and every week? You've got Fremantle next week, and Andrew Brayshaw has been in as good a form as anyone across the competition. So is this a role that you can expect to do weekly from here on out? Will it be a bit of a horses for courses situation?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it'll probably be a bit of a horses for courses sort of situation. I think, obviously, disappointing game the week before. We got done out of stoppage a fair bit. So I think we sort of just wanted to bring that back to level playing field and play one-on-one footy across the ground. So that's sort of, while it was probably floated throughout the week and happened this week. But, next week I'm not sure what'll happen. I think, we'll obviously just be, sort of horses for courses, as you said, throughout the year just to see what happens. But I think our midfielders bounced back. Obviously, you mentioned that Greeny and Timber were fantastic on the weekend, and then Cogs as well. So a few of the boys got back into form after an off week against Richmond. So, I think we might be back in our mid-gen next week. I'm not too sure. But, it's good just to have that option to be able to do that, I guess, for the team.
Can you give us some insight? Our very own Kane Corns bangs on about tagging endlessly and clubs' refusal to tag. Can you give us some insight into you went with that role yesterday? We hear clubs a lot of times say, we don't want to give up our structure or our system and how we look around the balls. Can you give us a level of insight as to the balance between, you running with a player versus trying to balance out the stoppage and having everyone fill the important places around the stoppage that you want to have filled?
Yeah, I think the hardest one's the centre bounce stuff, just because you want to win that centre bounces, it's so crucial, but you're also trying to play a role on someone. So that's really where I find it most difficult. Not tracking him and sort of sticking fat on your position. Whereas around the ground, I think most teams sort of body up against each other nowadays anyway, so it seems to be a little bit easier around the stoppage. But yeah, definitely. Like, you don't want to be too man focused at all. You definitely don't want to give up your team structure by any means. So that's sort of just talking to the other mids as well, just around how we're going around the contest and things like that in game, which I feel like we did really well yesterday as a midfield group. So I sort of just apply it by year in that scenario on how we're going around the ball and what looks we're getting and things like that to what we can do and what I can personally do when playing on someone.
And Lockie, joining you in that midfield group yesterday was big Braden Pruce. I mean, you've been used to having the last few years a big steamrolling, bullocking ruckman in Shane Mumford in the air, on the ground, physical. Pruce is a mountain of a man. He's had some tough injuries last year coming to the Giants. He sort of warmed into the game and got better and better yesterday. He seemed to wear down Jared Witts. There was a lot of boundary throw-ins and ball ups throughout the day. Just tell us about his impact to complement all the guys you mentioned, along with yourself, Quelling, Miller and the other midfielders running into some good form. They got some pretty good supply from Big Prusy yesterday.
Yeah, no, definitely. He was awesome yesterday. Big Prusy, as you said, he's a massive man. You sort of walk next to the other ruckman and make them look small sometimes. But yeah, I think he was a little bit nervous. Obviously, as you said, he's had a rotten run with injury over the last sort of 18 months. So I think he's a little bit nervous towards the start of the game, and then when he warmed into his work, especially in that second half, we've seen how damaging he can be, and giving the midfielders first use, which I'm sure that Tom Green and Tim Tarano, Josh Kelly and the likes will we'll have great pleasure in working with over the coming weeks and coming years.
And just one on the coach. Can I ask about Leon? I mean, he to me, when I watched that AFL documentary a couple of years ago, the real insights into the clubs, I found him the most impressive. When you're that fly on the wall, you want to hear what's happening behind the scenes. And what was a really tough year for the Giants. And, you know, it can be confronting, as we know. It's high-level competitive sport, the AFL, and a lot of honest, brutal conversations. But he just seems to have this great synergy with the group. And he's at an interesting stage, obviously. I'm not asking about his contract and to comment necessarily on that, but anyone that's in their ninth year, contract talks are on hold. You know, the club's got to assess all of that. But it just seems like he has a great connection with this group, that when you're down like last week, that you can sort of pick up the pieces and get things back on track. We saw that last year when the team didn't start so well.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think the best thing about Leon, as you said, is relationships. I think he really understands when to challenge and when to wrap your arm around a player. And I think during the week, obviously, we had a really disappointing game against Richmond. And he was sort of, time to challenge us and get in our face and sort of, like, it wasn't good enough, our performance, and he really ran that home. Whereas, like, weeks before where we've had losses, but they've been an honest loss, like, he sort of wrapped his arm around us a little bit and said, like, we just didn't quite get there. Like, we threw everything at him. So I think his ability to sort of read the situation and then be able to build relationships and manage relationships from there is something that he does very, very well. And as a playing group, like we all get along really well with Leon and we all have full belief in Leon. We've seen that at the end of last year. Our season was essentially nearly over with four or five weeks to go. And then his ability just to turn a few cogs and get a spark in the group got us to playing in finals and winning a final. The club and personally myself, like, I have ultimate belief in Leon and what we're trying to do this year. I think that, like, we're definitely going in the right direction. I can't really say much more than that about Leon, yeah.
Lockie, how's life up there in Sydney? We know we hear how expensive it is. It's been raining for about 2 months. You're a country Victorian boy. Have you settled into Western Sydney or Sydney life?
Yeah, well, this is my third year. I've been here for 2 years, and I reckon with COVID, I think I've spent more time out of Sydney than I have in the last 2 years. So I'm definitely still adjusting. Obviously coming from country Victoria and coming from a farm, it definitely does take a bit of adjusting. I'm slowly starting to get used to it. I'm living with one of my cousins at the moment, and he's from country Victoria as well. So that's definitely helping. Just having, like, someone, a familiar face outside the club, essentially, which I'm really liking. Having him around Sydney and being able to get out and about with him and sort of getting away from the club and away from footy has been good. Obviously, at home, I used to have that outlet of the farm, so having that outlet here has been really good. But, still trying to, not settle in, but still trying to sort of get used to city living and things like that. But, I'm really enjoying my time in Sydney. As you said, the weather hasn't been great, so it's been a bit frustrating all summer, being trapped inside most of the time. I'm slowly starting to get used to it. I definitely do miss the farm and being home, but I'm starting to get used to Sydney a little bit more. Hopefully we can get a normal year and I can spend a bit more time in Sydney.
Indeed. Nice job yesterday. Very well done collectively. I think the team rebounded and really set the tone of that match. Probably from the opening couple of minutes, you could feel like where that match was going to go. The Giants were certainly on yesterday. A trip to take on the Dockers next Saturday night in the West. So there's always a challenge every week, as we know, in AFL footy. But all the best to you and for the team in what is hopefully going to be a big year.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Lockie Ash wearing the number 7 for the Giants. That was Tuke Miller's lowest disposal game since round 16, 2020. So we normally used to see him just rack up in the 30s.
Yeah, that's right. And it sets a bit of a precedence, does it? I guess the next time Tuke Miller's allowed to roll around and have 30 or 35 and kick a goal and have plenty of clearances and the Gold Coast win a game by a couple of goals, and I guess those in the media will say, well, hang on, we've seen what it looks like, we've seen the template, and we've seen what happens to the Suns when they don't have Tuke Miller's drive. So well done to Lockie Ash, and well done to Leon Cameron for having the conviction to say, we are going to break structure, we're going to go against what most of the competition is doing, and we're going to stop their best player, and it worked.
So just on the Gold Coast, just for a couple of minutes, as good as the Giants were yesterday, Josh, you could feel early in that game, they just weren't there. And we said in the pre-match, we had Brenton Sanderson with us, and that this is a game that they should be looking at as really winnable now for where they've come as a group. So if you take in the pre-season, the trip to Perth, playing the reigning premiers last week, they brought a great competitive level. Mm. You knew what they were going to bring. They went away from that yesterday. So 60 inside 50s last week. They still had 50 yesterday, but they just can't seem to maximise the entries and just the ease of which GWS were able to transition the ball across the ground. The lack of pressure, that real scramble ball, they just didn't get their hands dirty. It was a real step backwards for the Gold Coast. So if they don't bring that as the fundamental,
yeah,
they're going to have those blowouts. I mean, look, really, I mean, if you didn't see that game, to me it felt like a 10-goal loss for the Gold Coast yesterday.
Yeah, and I think they would have taken it like that too, because they would have set themselves for that game. Yeah. And you know, looking at that game on Friday, I thought if Gold Coast can replicate what they did against Melbourne, that same level of output against a GWS squad who haven't been in great form, that would nearly be enough, but they just couldn't do it. They got nothing from too many last night. I mean, they can't ask for much more. Kaz Bolt and Chole kicked six between them. They can't ask them for any more than that. Well, they can't expect realistically any more than that. So there were a lot of others who just didn't have anywhere near the amount of output offensively, and then defensively didn't put enough pressure on as well.
Yeah, stinker of a night. They've got the Blues next week, of course, back at Metricon Stadium. Speaking of the Blues, after the break, we're going to go inside their camp with assistant coach Tim Clark. We'll have a chat to Robert Harvey, assistant coach at the Hawks, as we build up to Carlton and Hawthorn here on Sunday Crunch Time.
A sports news update for Rold. Eat good with Rold. It's fast, fresh Vietnamese.
I'm Victoria Raptis with your sports news update for Rold. Geelong skipper Joel Selwood's record-breaking 227th match as captain was one for the history books as his side pulled off an epic 43-point comeback against Collingwood at the MCG. In cricket, Australia's batting crumbled in the early stages of the third one-day international against Pakistan. Opening batters Travis Head and Aaron Finch were both dismissed without scoring. To NRL and Brisbane front rower Tom Flegler was placed on report four times during the club's 20-6 loss to the Warriors. The first three reports came in the first quarter of the match, including twice in a single play.
A sports news update for Rold. Fast, fresh Vietnamese.
You're listening to Crunch Time, brought to you by Isuzu. Go your own way with the 3-litre Isuzu D-Max and extraordinary 7-seat MUX.
Sunday Crunch Time, coming to you from the MCG, Carlton Hawthorn. Looking at lips of this one, what a beauty. 2-0, both teams. 110 bounce this afternoon, crowd starting to file in. And it's just a nice afternoon for footy. We'll see if the wind picks up. It gets a little swirly, of course, always here at the G. Josh Jenkins alongside myself, Brett Phillips. We're going to go inside the Carlton camper. Man, I reckon it'd be salivating today because the whole midfield group is together.
Yes.
Josh, for the first time with Adam Chera in with Cripps, Hewitt, Kennedy and Walsh. I speak of Tim Clark, the midfield coach, assistant coach at the Blues. Tim, that's going to be a nice feeling to have the whole gang together today.
Yeah, it is, Brett. Yeah, it's great that Walshy got back from his injury so quickly, which is a testament to our fitness program and him as an individual. And then to get Chez back in this week after missing last week because of the COVID protocols just adds a lot of depth to our group and a lot of balance.
Tim, Josh Jenkins here. Good luck this afternoon. How have you been able to strike? I guess a lot of the credit has to go to the individuals, but how have you been able to strike such a great amount of synergy amongst that midfield group in such a short amount of time?
It's a good question, Josh. We trained a fair bit of pre-season was about building that synergy and the connection between the players. We've got a lot of guys in our midfield group. It's just not the boys that are playing at the moment. There's three or four guys that are playing in our VFL that understand the way we want to play, and we're still looking to build that. And everyone knows what their role is, and whether that's playing on a wing, it's playing midfield, it's playing forward. There's really good clarity about what their roles are, and we've got some really good individuals within that are driving the behaviours that we want.
And two guys who are a part of that midfield mix, but I guess a lot of the focus goes on the guys at ground level, the two ruckmen in Mark Pitnett and Tom DeConing, who's an outstanding, you know, young talent. Talk about the impact that those two have had, and I guess the versatility and the difference that they both bring to the midfield mix when they're in the ruck.
Yeah, yeah. I'll start with Pitto. Like, he's a real warrior. He really jumps in hard against his opposition ruck. He competes at ground level. He's got high energy. He really gets our midfielders going, and it's great to start games with him in there. He drives a lot of those behaviours that I was talking about before. And then you've got Big Tommy, who is playing a really good role for us forward, and he's a lot more athletic in terms of his size and his reach than Pitto. And when he comes in, he gives us a different look. So our midfielders are really enjoying the fact we've got two good ruckmen that not only compete in the air and give them a good look, but at ground level they're really competitive and support each other.
Is Tommy, I know you're sort of focused on what the midfield's doing for the most part, is Tom a little bit more dangerous and I guess competent and capable as a forward than you may have thought?
Oh, we always knew he had that. He had an interrupted pre-season with a blood clot, so he missed sort of six weeks of training, and then he was sort of fast-tracked back in to our round one side, and he didn't get a great opportunity over that pre-season period to train with Harry, to train with Charlie in the forward line and build the synergy that you're talking about. But they've been able to do that over the last 3 weeks. He allows the others to be a bit more mobile. He allows us to play a slightly different structure forward of the ball, and that's at the moment it's working well, but we're still looking to build this as the year unfolds.
Yeah, I was listening to Sam Mitchell, Tim, during the week, you know, like, obviously coming in, you know, as with new clubs, you know, you're trying to build something over a period from the pre-season into the proper season games, and each week just trying to tick another box so we can see the strength of the Blues and what they've displayed in the first couple of games. But have you got a couple of key points today you've really maybe emphasised more than others that you just want to see step up to keep that improvement going?
Yeah, we want to continue seeing our method around the ball, our contest method, that is, how we win the footy, how we balance around it, and then how we set up defensively behind it. That's really important to us as a footy club. That's the brand that we're looking to build as the year unfolds. And what better chance against the Hawks, who have been so strong with their offensive footy over the last 2 weeks, to really show how strong we are around the ball and how we're going to look to defend it. And we feel today, if we can put them under huge pressure, it'll give us a really good chance to win the footy game. So that'll be a focus today.
You spoke about the Hawks, and I'm sure you watched their game closely, and how impressive were they over there in Adelaide, giving Port an absolute belting. What were the things you mentioned, the offensive side of the game? What were the other things that really impressed you from the Hawks last week, and I guess in round one as well?
Knowing a few of their coaches and some of their administrators, like, they're a really well-organised team. When you see them, they're well-structured around stoppages. They're really disciplined with what they do with their numbers. So that stood out to us. And you can't help but look past how they're moving the ball from one end of the ground to the other. They're going a little bit quicker. They're getting the ball to the open side. And they're playing an exciting brand of footy. So we are going to look to stop that today. And we feel that we're the team that can put them under a fair bit of pressure.
Now, Voss the Boss returns. Any chuckling about, or any ribbing about the fact that you perhaps didn't need the great man?
I think there was a few gags about that at the start of the week. I was the same as him. I missed last week too. So we've got two coaches coming back because of the COVID protocols. And we're just really excited to have him back here. He's a real leader of men. He really connects the group, both coaches and players. So we're excited to have him back. But we thought it was a great opportunity for Ash to play the role that he did last week, and we had a number of other players and coaches and other staff members that had to stand up to, and it's a testament to the footy club.
Yeah, speaking of those protocols, Adam sat out just as of yesterday. So Jordan Boyd, and I called the pre-season game, it was only 3 years ago, he was at Spotswood on the Footscray VFL list. So he gets an opportunity today on the MCG, which is great for this young man on a different journey. He's a bit more mature age at 23, but gee, he kicks the ball well, Tim.
Yeah, he does. He's really exciting. Yeah, we've got some really talented half-backers that are keeping him out of the side, and to be able to get him in to be able to show what he can do at AFL level today is really exciting for us as a footy club and for him as an individual. And that, talking about that story you just mentioned, Brad, it was 12 months ago that he was playing there at Spotswood. Yeah. So the journey from 12 months from playing there to here at the MCG has been a really good one for him, and we're really excited to see what he delivers.
4 or 5 years ago,
We're travelling and preparing for games, Tim, and you know, the chefs would serve up the wrong lunch, or your bus would be a little bit late from the airport, and it would almost throw us into a tailspin. Now you guys, you know, you're losing players and coaches, and you're able to, or having to adapt to so many things. Has it been relatively smooth adapting to, you know, you lose Jack Martin, and this week you lose Adam Sard. You don't, you know, you can't coach last week. The senior coach can't coach last week. Has it been somewhat smooth in a strange way to be able to just to keep charging forward?
I think the last 2 years with the COVID restrictions that the games had on them, everyone's become more adaptable. So I feel as an industry we've got better at that. But our footy club has been built on really good people. And, you know, like Brad Lloyd, you got Cookie. Guys have put together a really strong group of people where when someone goes down because of COVID or an injury or some other illness, we've got somebody else that steps into their role. And that can be on the playing field or it can be in the staff. We feel we've got really good people here that support each other. And so, one, the AFL industry is more adaptable now, but I feel as a footy club we're building something pretty strong here from a culture point of view.
Fascinated from where we sit here up in the comfort of the commentary box, Tim. Looking forward to this. It should be a beauty. 2-0, both teams, a lot to play for, and all the best.
Thanks, boys. Have a good call.
Tim Clark inside the Carlton camp, of course, looking after the midfield, and nice to have all those magnets.
What a midfield it is.
Lockie Plamman back into the 22 this week. Dan Back, it was the sub last week that was activated. Lewis Young's the other one too. Gets a Guernsey.
I like Lewis Young. He sort of burst onto the scene with the Western Bulldogs. I know Robert Murphy was really high on his talent and his size. He's got great size as a key back. The Dogs trialled him as a sort of relief pinch-hitting ruckman, which probably doesn't suit him. But the Blues, if they do have a weakness across the first 2 weeks, it's that secondary key back. So, yeah, I mean, I give him a great chance to be able to come in and play alongside Wiedering. And if he can play the system as much as anything, then he can really forge a position there because they're a bit unsure what to do with that second key back.
Yeah, Mitch McGovern out for this week. We've got a few that have had some long-term knee injuries, haven't they? Like Honey's been out for a while. Cunningham, we know, missed all of last year. Marchbank has been injured for, it seems like, an eternity. Liam Stocker, I think, back in the VFL this week. Nune's not playing today. Paddy Dow not playing is, you know, struggled to...
He has, yeah. It's a big year for Paddy Dow.
And now it's an even bigger challenge. Yeah,
it's going to be a harder midfield to get into, as you said. I guess he needs to go past one of those guys, which is going to be hard to see. The other way in is to be able to play on a wing or play at half forward and do something a little bit different. Or could he do what Lockie Ash is doing? You know, because all it is... Yep. Can you physically run with those guys and physically stand up to those good mids? And are you diligent enough to do it? So they're the questions that you need to ask. And it's hard for him to see Paddy Dow getting a position as it stands.
Indeed. Let's go inside the Hawks camp. Robert Harvey's been good enough to join us, assistant coach. Rob, thanks for your time.
My pleasure.
How's the feeling down there? It's been a great start. I mean, to go to Adelaide and beat Port is, no doubt, I'd imagine, given this group, just an extra cog of belief.
Well, that's probably the right term, because we still feel like we're feeling ourselves out a bit with how we're playing, and we know we'll get better as we go, and there's a great the game plan. So, it's been pleasing so far to see probably more the effort and the intensity of the players in the first two rounds. So, obviously, that needs to lift again today against a team that's red hot. But, so far, so good with just the players probably want to adapt and to play a new style.
Rob, good luck this afternoon. Josh Jenkins here. What tangible things does a win like that do for you as a coaching group? You're able to really drive home that you know, even though you're early on into your journey as a coaching group and a new program, it's, you know, you're on the right path. Is that the easy sell after a really good performance like that?
Yeah, and we probably don't really know the effect till we see the boys run out this afternoon and execute what we want them to execute. But I think in the medium term, it gives them a belief against a good team in a hostile environment that they can go away and bunker down and bring effort that's going to be competitive against a really good team. So that's good belief for a young group. And we've got enough older guys amongst the group sprinkled through the lines to be able to, understand, give a good understanding to the young players about what's expected. And obviously we are young, but we're still we're still trying to get that balance right between the now and the future, and we know we're trying to build a brand and a team that's going to be good, you know, in years to come. So that's the challenge for us right now.
And you talk about the young and the older, and one of the older guys who wasn't there last year, Jack Gunston, his return to that forward mix. We saw it against North in round one in a pretty sort of lackluster game. He was able, his forward craft and his nous was, you know, not necessarily the only difference, but it certainly stood out. And then some of his finishing last week was outstanding. So, you know, I'm sure the coaching group and the players are thrilled to have Gunner back in the lineup.
Yeah, and having come from another club, obviously, and not known Jack, or you know, I've seen him from afar, and probably haven't seen him from afar enough in the last couple of years. Good players give you really sharp reminders of how good they are sometimes, and he's been really enjoying some of the ball movement. But I think, you know, some of those goals that he's kicked in the first couple of weeks just gives us all a reminder of how good some of these players are. And you know, we haven't seen him play a lot over the last couple of years, as I said, and it's just nice to see him enjoying his footy again. And so, touch wood, physically good to be able to roll out 3 weeks in a row, and he's really, really looking good.
And someone who has benefited from Jack's presence, I'm sure, is Mitch Lewis, a breakout game last week. But you can quickly come back to earth with a thud if you're not ready to rock and roll, because Jacob Wiedering will be right there alongside him every step of the way, and that's going to be a great challenge for a young forward, you know, making his way.
That's right, and I'm you know, I know that you're probably more equipped to speak than I am, Josh, about all that stuff. But in the end, the way he's competed all through pre-season, more than anything's been the most impressive thing. Every time the ball goes near him, he spread eagles the pack, and when he marks it, that's well and good. But we've been wrapped more than anything with the contest that he brings. And I know Luke Bruce and the small forwards are really appreciating that. So when he does have his day, like he did last week, that's the bonus. But I think for a guy like his understanding that his contest and the fierceness of it and what it brings to the front half is what matters, and all he has to do is that again today.
Rob, just one last one. Will Day, great to see him back playing some footy. I mean, tough year last year, just the 5 games, high draft pick, 2020, game 17. It'd be nice to see him from here just get some really good continuity into his footy.
Yeah, and he, again, as a new coach, he's one that I haven't really got a good handle on either coming into the club, and he hasn't done much of pre-season, so he's probably come to hand quicker than we actually thought he would.
Yep.
So I'm a bit like you guys. I'm learning about this guy, and I've heard a lot about his talent. He's obviously an early pick, and what I have seen, I really like. But I think you know, he's just earned his place really, really quickly in our team, and yep. You can see the esteem he's held with his teammates, and he's a great potential leader in the making as well. So it is just nice to see him back today and injury-free.
No doubt. All the best to you and the team.
Cheers, thanks. Good on you.
Robert Harvey, assistant coach at the Hawks, with their perspective. We've spoken to Tim Clark, of course, inside the Blues. Josh Jenkins alongside me for Buy My Stock. Got excess stock? Visit buymystock.com.au. We'll drill down on Brisbane and North Melbourne last night, and all the other talking points so far of round three. Up next.
Welcome to Crunch Time, brought to you by Isuzu. Go your own way with the 3-litre Isuzu D-Max and extraordinary 7-seat MUX.
A big warm welcome to Sunday Crunch Time, particularly if you're joining us for the very first time as we build up to a huge Sunday of footy. Carlton and Hawthorn coming your way in just over an hour's time. St Kilda, Richmond a little bit later on this afternoon at Marvel Stadium, West Coast to take on the Fremantle Dockers in the Derby over in Perth. Brett Phillips alongside Josh Jenkins. The day after, the Cats beat the Pies 52,974 at the MCG. It was a fast finishing Cats that got home by 13 points. Brisbane absolutely trouncing North Melbourne. We'll dissect that game this hour. Led from start to finish to the tune of 108 points, and the Giants got their season off to a much better start after the first two rounds, 12-11-83, defeating the Gold Coast 8-9-57. So there's plenty in the wash, certainly from a big Saturday, our pre-game show for Thirsty Camel. Answer the Camel's call, Thirsty Camel Bottle Shops. Good crowd building up too. I think we expect quite a few in the house. Josh at the MCG this afternoon. A beautiful, good day for footy. Not too warm.
Carlton home game. What could we get 50?
I would think we could get more.
Really?
Absolutely. Speaking of crowds,
yes,
4,014. Now I did that game yesterday, and we were looking out, thinking, gee, there's not many here. The bounce is only about 15, 20 minutes away. Then a contingent sort of came in, and fans tend to come in a little bit later now because there's no sort of pre-game curtain raiser. But, gee, that's a real step back. I don't know the explanation for that. The show, it seemed like the show was on next door because every time they panned the camera, there was kids on rides.
Right.
There was a bit going on around the showgrounds area, but that's a throwback to their very early days.
Oh, I mean, we'd have to do a bit of homework. If only there was someone in here who could do some homework for us. But, that'd be the lowest crowd at an AFL game for a long time, would it not?
Well, I can tell you, as an old Fitzroy boy, I'll get one mention of Fitzroy in today.
Right.
But their last ever win, Fitzroy, was at the Witten Oval when they beat the Dockers in...
I can imagine.
1995 or 96, and there would have been around 4,000 to 5,000 on the terraces. It sounded like 50,000. Because the supporters were starved of any wins in the last couple of years. So 4,000 can make a fair bit of noise.
Well, I mean, the 4,000 there yesterday wouldn't necessarily be in a hurry to come back because it wasn't the greatest spectacle of all time. You were calling it, so you'd be better placed to speak on it than me. But it was disappointing, and we didn't get the numbers we were looking for in the AFLW final here either. I think about 6,000 was the number.
Yeah,
we
scattered around the MCG.
I think 10 to 15 was the sort of projection that the AFL were hoping for. So not quite the amount that they would have wanted because 6,000 in this stadium feels empty. Well, feels incredibly empty. So that was a bit of a shame too. But it's just the trend at the moment, isn't it? People aren't quite turning up.
Still reluctant, it seems, to go to live sport. But in Adelaide next week, and you've lived and breathed in Adelaide. What was it, 2 years ago they got 50,000?
53 they got.
And Adelaide beat Carlton
to
win the AFLW. So we'd expect a pretty good turnout in Adelaide next week.
Yeah, I mean, if they get a nice day, it was an incredibly, from memory, I was there that day. It was a very warm, sunny day.
Yep.
Adelaide's first, was it their first premiership?
Second.
It feels like an eternity ago.
They won it in the first year under Beck Goddard, and that was
that's right.
The one under
Matthew Clark. Yes, spot on. So that was a huge crowd. But I would think, and the season's been building to this, I think Melbourne and Adelaide have been the two dominant sides in the AFLW competition. And, yeah, I would imagine 40-plus. Yep. I think the showdown was a little light on Friday night. But, I think they could expect 40,000 over there, which is a great thing for women's footy.
Give us the feel as someone who's lived in Adelaide, that two-team town, about just the situation that Ken Hinckley, Josh, finds himself in right now. I mean, a bit like Leon Cameron, they're in that sort of ninth, tenth year. And this is a period, if you haven't delivered a premiership by now, you come under more scrutiny, particularly that they've got so close, all these prelim finals under Kenny, and there's probably been a movement there for a little while, hasn't there, in Adelaide? A little bit agitated that they want some form of change, but you're 0-3, and just, I suppose, the style of footy or their brand of footy that they're serving up at the moment has got, people in the world of pain. The Port supporters who we know are that passionate in following their footy club. It gives a bit of a feel the sort of pressure he'd be under.
A lot of Port fans, in my time, you know, you're quite recognisable in Adelaide, so you go anywhere and both supporters of both teams come up to you a lot. There's a real sense of sort of entitlement or the need for people to come up and find out what's going on in the footy world. And I used to get a lot of Port fans come up to me and actually express their displeasure for the way Ken would coach them, or for the most part, I'm saying, hang on, you're third on the ladder. What are you really worried about? But he's never really been accepted over there. Like, he's never really been, you know, completely loved by the Port fan base over there, which to me seems ludicrous. And I don't know whether it's, I guess, you know, a lot of the Port coaches of the past couple of decades have been Port people or Port players or Port Magpies. You know, Mark Williams, Matthew Primus.
Well,
he was
the first outsider, but he came in at a time when the club was in absolute
really picked them up. But you know, I don't know what the reason is, but I always got that sense that, you know, from people coming up to you and just not really ever loving Ken Hinckley or being in love with Ken Hinckley, even when they've really, you know, gone to prelim finals and had a lot of home finals. So make no mistake, the heat on him over there right now would be out of control. It would be completely out of proportion with how they're going. because we should not remember, or we shouldn't forget, sorry, Dixon, they've got Gray out, and their forward line's depleted. They're reliant on two young key forwards. They've got really good players all over the ground. Alia. I mean, Port Adelaide win that game if Alia plays because he quells Himmelberg or Gallant, who kick four each. That does not happen if Alia is playing. So we need to be realistic about it. Port fans should try and be a little bit more realistic and pragmatic about it. But no doubt, zipping three, no one expected them to be in that position. And the way that showdown went the other night, they should not have that should never have got to that position where Jordan Dawson could take a free kick and kick a game winner. So, look, they got the D's. They got the D's Thursday night. Zipping four stares them right in the face. So, and then they come here and they play the Blues.
Yeah.
So it's can quickly spiral out of control.
Pretty confronting early for Port Adelaide. So you talk about maybe the supporters not ever totally warming to Kenny, but it seems like he's always had a great connect with his group. But do you feel like that connect is maybe just tiring? Is there a telling sign? You've lived and breathed on the inner sanctum, gone through different coaches.
Yeah.
Where it just gets to a stage where maybe there's just not the gel between coach and players or the message getting across or getting a little tired.
It probably happens with the older quartet who think, we've had this guy for a decade. We've been close, but we've never actually got ourselves to the last day. You know, there's teams, we got to the last day but couldn't win on the last day. GWS got to the last day and couldn't win on the last day. You run into really good teams in Richmond. They haven't even been able to get past the prelim final. They've had home prelims, which they've coughed up. Their performance against the Western Bulldogs in the prelim, that would really haunt them, and that would still sort of sit with them. And that might be, not that they're looking back at it, but it's that, and this is what the older players might be thinking, have we just gone over the other side of the slope? We've really been building, created great opportunities for ourselves. Have we just tipped over the edge? And that's what, doesn't take much to shift your focus off what you need to do. And maybe, not being there, you don't get as much insight, but maybe that's where they're living at the moment.
One of the early season stories we're certainly following, Melbourne Carlton the next 2 weeks for Port Adelaide, as you mentioned. So we'll continue to monitor that. Brisbane last night, they absolutely tore up North Melbourne. 30 points at quarter time, 39 at the half, 56 three-quarter time. Really blew it open in the last quarter, 9-1. Win by 108 points. So they've beaten Port Adelaide, Essendon and North are at the rear. But Port Adelaide and Essendon obviously came in with good credentials into the season, having made the top eight, Port making a prelim last year. So Brisbane have done what they've had to do, and we'll talk about the dynamics of their team. You spent a bit of time with David Noble.
I did.
Over in Adelaide, and he was straight to the point last night. He couldn't hide his disappointment. He was brutally honest. And any time a team puts in a pretty limp performance like that last night, it's the first thing that comes to a coach's mind is, righto, we're getting on the training track, bring your mouth guard, we're going hammer and tongs. How long does that sort of last, the effect of that?
He's a smarter operator than that, David Noble. And now, because it's a short-term fix. The bring your mouth guard, the whole concept of we're just going to train harder, it's such a short-term fix. And you know what? North actually needed a short-term fix. You and I called the game against West Coast last week.
Yep.
They were dead set lucky they played West Coast. Well, they played half of West Coast last week, not even half of. They were lucky because I don't think that last week's performance beats any other team in the competition. They got very lucky last week. And they go and play a true contender last night on their turf. It's 4-0 before you've blinked, before the cheer squad have even been able to wrap the banner up and put it underneath and get back to their seats. And from there, it just got worse and worse. They got lucky. Brisbane kicked 23-18. They kicked a bit straighter. They're pushing up 27, 28, 29, 30 goals. We don't see those types of beatings anymore. They allowed 78 inside 50s, just staggering numbers. And that's what would drive David Noble and that coaching staff the maddest, is they didn't even compete. They weren't even in the contest. They weren't up for the fight. They got absolutely destroyed in every single statistical category. And, they should be thanking Charlie Cameron that he kicked 2-6 and not 6-2, because it could have been even worse. And
they felt like they'd sort of got past
Yeah, I think they definitely. Yeah, they definitely had gone past that phase of getting really beaten up. But this game, when you bump into a contender, and I don't know, thinking back to 2016 and 17 when we were at our strongest in Adelaide, we're an offensive focused team like Brisbane are. We used to really set ourselves for a team that would be coming to Adelaide, a lower-ranked team, and we'd really set ourselves for 15 or 20 and say, you know what, if we put our foot on their throat, we can put 5 on the board in the first 25 minutes. It's all over. They want no part of it from there on, and you can basically, cruise through the rest of the game. So Brisbane have that ability. They want for nothing, Brisbane. I mean, their true test is going to come at the end of the year. Yep. That's when we're going to judge them, because they've got great talent all over the field. They've got 5 or 6 dangerous forwards. Darcy Fort's added a little bit as a backup ruckman. So they want for nothing, and I guess their true tests will come for them, or will wait for them down the road.
No, you're right, because we know once again, it's sort of a given now what they've built under Chris Fagan, that the foundation's there, the list is that it should be somewhere in the mix of those top 4 to 6 teams, 1 and 5 in finals. So how are they going to build a team? Can you see anything in the first 3 weeks that tells you that this team could be better, or is it just too early at the business end when it really counts in big cutthroat finals?
My query on them has always been that ability to remain composed in the big moments. Yep. They've been really inaccurate in front of goal in big games, and they've got a lot of players who play on instinct and flair ahead of the ball. Danaher likes to fly high and take long shots on goal. Charlie's the same, plays with great speed. McCarthy's the same. They're all athletic and they're all, fast and powerful. My query has been their composure and their ability to make the easy play or the simple play to allow someone else to kick an easy goal, and also to allow a teammate to come into the game, because, it's all well and good for, BP, you might be having a great night. Mm. The game might be in the balance. You're having a great night. But if you flick one over the top to me, or you give one to me, then we're both in the game. We're both having a good night. You're feeling good about yourself because you've set one up, and I'm feeling good because I've been able to kick one. That's been my query about Brisbane, but I saw particularly against Essendon where I thought Danaher in particular would want to fly for his marks and kick long goals. He was able to, I can see a spare line, I'm going to hit him, and that's the growth, that's the maturity that we're seeing from the Lions. And again, they're going to have greater challenges than what they had last night. Make no mistake, they might have an easier game this year than last night, but they're starting to show signs that they are really in sync, and everything's sort of coming together for them.
Yeah, extremely watchable, aren't they?
Very.
Those tough, hard inside. McCarthy, a guy who's just one of the best aerialists for his size. Zach Bailey.
Yep.
Almost like every time he turns for goal, this guy does not miss. Mm.
He feels like a luxury for them ahead of the ball. Like, he feels like a guy that you could put in the middle. Yeah. I feel like he'd be a great halfback, running halfback.
Yep.
He just feels like a luxury for them. He's a really good sort of utility if they need him. He's a strong body. They're really, you are right, they're probably the most watchable team in the competition. They probably have been that for the past couple of years, particularly up at the Gabba when the weather's nice. And it's the ruse. I mean, their VFL side got beaten by over 100 as well yesterday, so that would have been a lonely old flight home.
Well, you cop a hiding in the seniors. You should go to match committee. Righto, who's played well in the twos? We need to make some changes
And
you've been beaten by 104 points.
Yeah, no, it's when your two programs are combining for 200 plus point defeats, it's not great. So yeah, it won't be a great week to be a North Melbourne Kangaroo. That make no mistake about it. But David Noble is, he's spoken with a lot of rage and emotion, but he's a very methodical worker. He'll work his way through it. They'll use this as a real week of education. If we don't come to play, if you don't prepare yourself properly, if you don't do all the things at training that you need to do to get yourself right, this competition is way, way too hard, and we are nowhere near good enough to be able to roll up and play against a contender and not be absolutely on song and in sync, and when we do, we lose by 100.
trip to Sydney next Saturday afternoon, so it doesn't get any easier. And Geelong have got Brisbane, so this is really the first test for Brisbane. I mean, go back, was it 2 years ago they lost with the controversial
free kick/non-free kick. Mark Blitzarve's holding the ball. I think Zach Bailey laid that. Was it Zach Bailey? He definitely kicked the game winner the week after anyway. But yeah, that'll be a really, really good contest Friday night down at the Cattery. I presume that Geelong's weather's turning south and sour. So I think the Lions, if they're looking for a bit of Queensland sun, they'll be coming to the wrong place.
I'll tell you, the other one I liked in the Brisbane lineup last night is Marcus Adams, a guy who's had so much injury. I just feel like he gives them just some nice solidarity in that back half. I mean, he's as strong as an ox. I mean,
oh,
trying to out-muscle this guy in a one-on-one contest. He's a really important pillar.
Yeah, he's a guy I played on at once or twice, but as you said, he would have played against him a lot more, but he missed so many games with serious injuries. But he's never had any worries about being able to still get in the gym and lift weights because he's an absolute Adonis. He's near on the best physique in the game, but he's a really good overhead mark. He really complements Harris Andrews and the third tall defend Darcy Gardner really well as well. So he adds a fair bit to that group, and he's played really well on Tom Hawkins on a few occasions because he's got that ability to match him body for body and strength for strength. So yeah, really hopeful for the Lions' sake that he can sort of play eight, and they might have to manage him a little bit because he'd be north of 30.
He'd be around that mark.
So you know they might have to manage him considering his injury history, but he certainly adds a fair bit. It doesn't, it allows Gardner not to have to play on a big guy, and it also allows Andrews to occasionally play on the second key forward, and he can help intercept in the air.
Melbourne, they get Jake Lever and Ben Brown back for Port Adelaide on Thursday night, so they'll go from strength to strength. But I want to ask you, so Luke Jackson, and I want to ask you about Tim English as well.
Yeah.
Both out of contract, both from WA. I mean, it seems like, Jackson, just reading between the lines and the way they've sort of set up the money distribution across the top players, are going to allocate enough to keep him happy, and he's part of a club that, looks like it's going to have sustained success now for a period of time, and he looks pretty happy. So you would expect he's going to continue his future at Melbourne. Tim English, I'm just keen to get your thoughts on both those guys.
Yeah,
WA clubs would love to have.
I love both. Absolutely love both. And they go about it in a different manner. I spoke about Tim English a lot on the run home on Friday with Andy Marr. He does things. He reminds me a lot of Sam Jacobs, a guy I played a lot of footy with, because he goes about his business in the ruck in a different manner.
Yep.
A lot of times, Mark Pitnett's making a career out of physicality and force and being a big brute and setting the tone from a physical point of view in the ruck. And that's what a lot of us look for and love in ruckmen, Mumford and those guys who are really physical.
Yeah.
But then you've got rucks like Dean Cox, who are great with their great technicians in the ruck. They've got great craft. They've got great touch, and they get around the ground and they can kick the ball on both feet. They get a lot of uncontested marks. That's what we saw from English the other night. 24 disposals, 12 score involvements, marks, running bounces. He got back and helped, took a nice grab over Buddy Franklin at one stage. He covers the ground really well. He can kick the ball on both feet. He can go ahead of the ball, take a mark and kick a goal. So I think I'm sort of presuming a little bit and assuming a little bit, which is dangerous, but I reckon they would have said to him at different stages, we want you to toughen up and be a bit more physical, but that's not his game. There's a minimum standard when you're playing the ruck, I reckon, about how physical and how tough you need to be, and he is that, but everything else that he brings is just amazing. He's so athletic. He's got great dexterity for a big guy, and he plays the ruck position different to a lot, but he's at least as effective. He's only 24 years of age.
You know what you made me think of? They never played the same position, and they're from totally different eras. But when the Bulldogs had Simon Beasley, in the era of full forwards, in the 80s there, Simon was the stockbroker. Off-field, wearing the suit all day, and then coming out of the Witten Oval, it's blowing a gale, trying to kick goals on the weekend. But in comparison to the other four forwards at the time, Simon was different. I mean, he wasn't that, charging Tony Lockett at a pack, but he could play some great effective footy, kicked 100 goals, I think, a couple of times. So it's perception, isn't it? I mean,
it is. It
you
is.
Can only, you can only be who you are and bring your strengths.
That's right. And when you try and be someone you're not, you don't. You can't fulfil your potential. And English is, you know, he's had some years in the system and he's developing beautifully. I think Dogs fans, or the Dogs, head office and front office would be desperate to keep him because the West Australian teams will come hard for him, as they will with Luke Jackson. Luke Jackson goes about it in a completely different manner. He just wants to run through you. Tim English will run around you and outrun you. Luke Jackson will just run straight over you. He'll put those brand new teeth at risk. Because he's physically tough, he's a bullet of gate. He's to be honest, he's my most. I'm enjoying watching him more so than anyone in the competition at the moment. The way he goes about it, and make no mistake, I would think West Coast with an aging Nick Natanui would be throwing up an absolute fortune at both those two boys.
No doubt. I might get your take, Josh. I sort of had my say on it yesterday, or had just a view. I know it was discussed on Saturday Crunch Time in and around the Hawthorn situation that they've now got to try and manage delicately.
Yep.
They put a statement out in regard to the Cyril Rioli situation and what's come to light in the last 48 hours with the way or why he, the full story, why he exited Hawthorn and the continued strained relationship, particularly with Jeff Kennett as the president and what he said to Cyril's partner at the time going back a few years ago. Have you got your own take on it, just having observed what sort of transpired yesterday?
I'm not as educated on the whole situation as I'd like to be because I just I was working at the game last night, so I haven't seen a lot of it, but I haven't seen and been able to speak to enough people about it. But what I will say is, Hawthorn, there's so many good things about the Hawks. You know, they had the awkward handover with Mitchell and Clarkson. We've seen what they've been able to do on field. There's a lot of positivity around the Hawks. And this is one of their most beloved, successful players who is now finally coming out publicly saying, look, you know, this wasn't good enough. This is why I've stayed away and it needs to be dealt with. So, you know, there's two sides to every story. So it's not like just because Cyril says, you know, Jeff did this and he should be gone, then he should be gone. But it's certainly, Hawthorn really need to get in front of it because it looks clear to me that Cyril and his family are not really going to be a part of Hawthorn until something changes or something sort of certainly is dealt with in a manner that they see fit. And there's a letter on that was written and I guess it hasn't quite done the trick. So I'm not sure what the remedy is, but they need to remedy it.
You've been inside a footy club with Indigenous players.
Yes, that's the other element.
You've experienced this. I mean, race, as we know, it's a really fine line, isn't it? Unless you are around Indigenous people, you maybe don't have your total head around what is acceptable, what is not acceptable. But you've experienced that far more than me.
Yes,
playing with Indigenous players.
Indeed, and I've spent a lot of time with Eddie Betts, and I've spoken to him a lot, and I am very, very close with Charlie Cameron as well, and I've seen some things that have gone on, you know, across my time, and things that have been, you know, made public and spoken about in terms of what we did and what we went through as a club, and it can really fracture a group because, you know, I think in my time in Adelaide, we had Wayne Miller Jr. and Curtly Hampton and Eddie Betts, and a lot of those guys they drive a lot of the energy of the group. They're a really bubbly group of people, the Indigenous boys, when they get together, and they bring great life to the group. And I know Sean Burgoyne was sort of heavily involved in the situation as well. So you need to be acutely aware of how the rest of those guys feel with this situation as well and ensure it doesn't sort of just bubble away.
More to play out with that story during the week. After the break, we'll check in with the Demons AFLW team. Lauren Pearce, after they booked their spot in the grand final, got past that prelim final hurdle for the first time to take on the Crows next Saturday afternoon. We'll check in with the subs for both teams, for Carlton and Hawthorn. The bounce just over half an hour away. MCG, the Blues and the Hawks, our game this afternoon.
You're listening to Crunch Time, brought to you by the Isuzu D-Max. Born to live.
It's Sunday Crunch Time from the MCG. Carlton Hawthorn coming your way in 40 minutes' time. I can tell you the sub for the Blues this afternoon will be Jack Martin. It'll be Daniel Howe for the Hawks. Lance Whitnell at the Blues today. Their former great forward, of course, presenting young Jordan Boyd with his debut Guernsey, wearing number 37, the 23-year-old, to grace the hallowed turf for the MCG for the very first time. We're going to have a chat to Lauren Pearce very soon, part of the Melbourne AFLW winning lineup yesterday, seeing off a fast finishing Brisbane at this very ground to take on Adelaide next Saturday afternoon, which will be at the Adelaide Oval. Josh Jenkins alongside myself, Brett Phillips, our expert today for Buy My Stock. Got excess stock? Visit buymystock.com.au. Andy Maher and Kane Corns will join us for the call in about half an hour's time. As we start to zero in, Josh, a bit more on this game, a really good crowd building up. Both teams out doing their preliminaries at the moment. What's the expectation today for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's I guess if it was a horse race, the Hawks win over Port doesn't quite look as good as it did 6 days ago. But nevertheless, they were really impressive. Their ball movement was just sublime. It would have been nice to have been inside 50 for the Hawks last weekend. Gunston, yep. Lewis and Bruce all capitalising and kicked 12 between them. Lewis kicked a handful. He was excellent, but he's got a big task ahead of him today. Jacob Wiedering, in my opinion, is the premier key defender in the game at the moment. He takes on the number one dog every single week. He doesn't have a lot of support, or he doesn't have stable support yet. We've spoken about the battle between Lewis Young and Oscar McDonald, Mitch McGovern, sort of in and out at the moment. He's out today. Plowman's back into the lineup, so Wiedering has to always be on the main man. So be a good challenge for Lewis up against one of the premier key defenders in the game. And then I guess the midfield battle, it's all about, you know, we've seen how dominant the Carlton mids have been across the first fortnight. Mm-hmm. Today's the first day we see them, or first game that we see them, in their totality. They've got everyone. They've got Walsh, Chera's back. The two rucks are playing and performing really well. No McAvoy for the Hawks. That's a big loss for them. Can the Blues rucks get on top and give their mids first use? It's going to be an excellent contest.
And as good as they were, Hawthorn, last week, they were minus 24 clearances to Port Adelaide. So
They got beat up in a lot of the stats, except the scoreboard, where they won by 11 goals.
Unbelievable. Stats, tell us interesting stories. So we'll talk more about this game very, very shortly. Is it a couple of drops of rain I'm seeing?
Yeah, it's been sort of on and off.
A little bit misty.
It's definitely misty at the moment, but if it doesn't get any heavier than this, it'll still be a nice day for footy.
Perfect. What a day it was yesterday for Melbourne's AFLW. It was magnificent. Lauren Pearce is joining us.
5.5 gone, third term. Scores are level in this preliminary final. Lauren Pearce just grabbed it straight out of the ruck, settled, and wobbles it over the top of the goal umpire's hat.
Sorry, Coxie. I just jumped over the top of you. I've got to get the dulcet tones of Matthew Cox in. He did a beautiful job calling the game yesterday, and Lauren Pearce has been good enough to join us. Lauren, it must be a great feeling. Congratulations to make it to the big dance, the most important game.
Yeah, it's great. Hey, guys. 6 years in the making, so finally come through for us at the
D. Tell us about the end of the match as Brisbane were really charging and almost, had a chance to run you down yesterday. Just take us through that last quarter.
It was honestly a bit of a blur. In a situation like that, you don't know how much time you've got left and what's going to happen. And I think it was in the last 30 seconds that they ended up getting it off us, trying to hammer it forward. So, the heart was pumping, but luckily we were able to chill it out in the end and get that in the win.
And a huge thrill to be able to get the win and progress at your traditional home ground, or the Melbourne Footy Club's traditional home ground, the MCG. It must have been great to have been able to do the business here at the G.
Yeah, well, obviously at Casey there's a lot of wind and stuff, and there was still a bit of wind at the G, but I could imagine what it was like if we were playing back there. great stadium. Great vibe and feel, and I think the most special part was being able to celebrate it at the end of the game with all the the fans and the family that are around and walking around the ground and just seeing all the smiles on supporters' faces, like that was just, I think for me, that was a moment that I'll always remember, and hopefully we can get a few out to Adelaide Oval next week.
And you've set yourself up nicely for a big grand final performance. Yesterday's performance by yourself was, you're among the best players on the ground, 15 disposals, 11 hitouts, and a nice goal, as we heard in the opener. So you must have been thrilled with your own personal performance.
Yeah, and I've been a bit up and down throughout the season. And for me, going into that game, I was just focusing on trying to be aggressive and help the team out where I can. So be able to get some touches and to get a goal in the end when you're not expecting to was a nice touch to it.
And as you look ahead now, Lauren, because the Crows beat you earlier in the season, the mind now shifts to that game, and they know all about winning premierships. They've won a couple in the early formation of the AFLW. What's sort of the first things that spring into your mind as you go head to head and get another chance to try and beat them in the most important game?
I mean, I think there's a little bit of redemption as well to be had. Our first game this season against them, you know, we didn't play how we wanted to play, and obviously they came out real hard and strong, and we probably weren't used to it for that point in our season. But I think it's been a definite learning curve from that, and we've tried to implement a little bit of their style into our game, but also I think we can handle it a lot better. We're really looking forward to it. We know it'll be an absolute tough match, and we're all going to have to bring solid performances and just play how we need to play. So hopefully it's a change of result. That'd be nice.
Are you looking forward to a nice hostile environment over there at Adelaide Oval? I was there for the Crows' grand final victory over the Lions a few years ago, where there were 53,000 in the house. So I guess from your point of view, it'd be nice to go over there and shut up 45 or 50,000 Crows fans.
Oh, wouldn't it ever? Last time we played, we were over in Adelaide this year playing them, and there were some vocal supporters. But I love that. I love that part of the game. And it's not always that you hear them yelling out things through the game. You're pretty focused. But on the odd occasion, you might hear a comment slip out, and it'd definitely be good to get a few D supporters over there, but I'm sure they'll be drowned out by the Adelaide ones. But at the end of the day, it gives the field a great environment, a great feel to it. Like, to have that many supporters come out and watch, even though they might not necessarily be supporting you, you can pretend that they are, I suppose.
Take us through your week. What does it look like from a preparation point of view? You always, you want to keep things as normal as possible, but the reality is grand final weeks are never normal. So what does it look like for you and your teammates?
Yeah, so we've got a Zoom call this evening just to set up the week and have a conversation about what's happening, but it'll be pretty much the same. We train Monday nights and Thursday night. We have some optional touch on a Tuesday that the girls get down and do at the gym. And then I'm assuming we'll fly out on Friday to then be in Adelaide for Saturday's game. So nothing really will change, which is nice. And hopefully that'll help and work for us.
And Lauren, just a bigger picture one to finish. Just the continued evolution of the AFLW. And, there was a delay with the prelim. We're still, as a society, hopefully, getting right towards the back end of it now. We're still dealing with, COVID and the issues that can present in, the hiccups to the schedule and so forth. But just when you look at the season, how do you look back on it, with the continued emergence of players and, the standard of footy and just the way AFLW is tracking?
Yeah, there's been a few teams that have copped it hard from COVID and having players out, having to use top-up players. For us, it was at the start of the season. We used our whole team pretty much this season at the start. We had quite a few girls in and out for the first couple of games, but I think we've been really lucky and fortunate for the rest of the season that it hasn't affected us too much. We're always doing everything we can to keep away from big spaces, a lot of people, because we know that at the end of the day, the healthiest list is going to go a long way to winning that premiership. And, you know, Adelaide's been able to do it as well. They haven't had much going on with them. So I think just staying healthy has been the key. And you just never know, and you've just had to take it in your stride with games being changed. But we all love playing footy, and that's a big part of our summer. So we try and do everything we can to be able to play and get up for games.
And the competition goes to another level, doesn't it, for next season with the emergence of more new clubs. So everyone's going to have some representation, which makes it fascinating in the off-season to see where players go left, right and centre.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I can't wait to see who goes where and who's been enticed or who wants a different challenge. But hopefully we can keep most of our list together, and obviously aware that there are some players that are going to shift, but yep. You kind of don't really hold any bad blood for them because they're just trying to chase opportunities that they might not have or want another challenge. So, yeah, looking forward to who parts ways with what teams and who's been lucky enough to pick up some decent players.
All that to play out, but in the immediate, it's next Saturday, Adelaide Oval. The early kickoff, it's going to be all eyes on Adelaide and Melbourne to see who wins the AFLW Premiership. All the best in the build-up, and for Melbourne trying to crack it for the first time. Lauren, good luck.
Thanks. Go Dees.
Good luck,
indeed.
Lauren.
Lauren Pearce, full of energy. I remember seeing Lauren as a very young basketballer, and she's done all right.
Indeed.
Converting across to footy.
Indeed, yeah, indeed. Was among the best handful of players on the ground yesterday, yep. So she's certainly set herself up well for a big grand final, and it will be a big week. I think Lauren and her teammates are it's not going to be a normal introduction into yeah. Adelaide. They'll be ready for them over there,
no doubt. Our talkback is for Kogan Mobile. Make the switch to Kogan Mobile. Crunch time thanks to Thirsty Camel Bottle Shops. We're going to come back and continue to look at Carlton and Hawthorn. Any Mark Kane Corns to join us very soon. The banners are coming out. Good crowd in at the G. A little bit of misty rain about. Looks like it'll abate though. We'll have a pretty good afternoon for footy. Back with more on Crunch Time.
G'day, Mike Hussey here. Get on board Australia's best fantasy cricket game, KFC Supercoach BBL. It's fun, free and easy to play. Play today at supercoach.com.au.
T's and C's apply. New South Wales authorisation number TP/01005.